Breadwinners. I'm Jennifer Owens.
I'm Rachel Ellison.
And this is the show where you, me, and everyone listening is talking about work and family, chores, school, all the things. Summer vacation, by the time this comes out, it's going to be, oh my God. Hopefully we've all already paid for all the summer camps.
Right. That would be helpful.
Oh my Lord. I'm already in it, in this conversation. So for the pandemic, one of the things that worked in our favor was, you know, destroyed my children's mental health, but it saved our finances, was that we didn't pay for any sort of summer programming.
Mm.
And now that's back in a big way. And I'm like, oh my God, how did we ever pay for stuff in the past? So anywho, are your kids doing... Do they have like summer, do you have summer plans?
One is doing sleepaway camp for the first time.
Yeah.
And that's exciting. We'll see how that goes. And then the other one is doing drama camp and some other stuff.
Yeah. Where you stitch it all together. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, yeah, ma'am.
For sure. Mine is going away to be the counselor at a sleepaway camp. That's what one of them's doing. And the other one is doing two like techie computer programming, something or another, sciencey sort of stuff at NYU this summer, because that's what they graduate into when they're teens. So, And guess what? Still costs you just the same as sleepaway camp.
Did not know that. Interesting.
The worst crock for those of you when your children get to be 15 going on 16, isn't that a, when you're 15 going on 16, yeah. Is that, what's Julie Andrews? Oh my God. What's the movie? A Sound of Music. Oh my God. My head is shutting down. That when your daughter's sleepaway camp, you know, and she ends up loving it because she has camp friends, mm-hmm. and there's a camp counselor, you know, camp culture, they will come to you and say, she could be a counselor in training.
Right.
And you're like, oh, that's awesome. You know, and kind of graduating, you know, a little bit more responsibility and blah, blah, blah. And it's a path. And at least at my daughter's camp, it just meant that I had to only pay half the sleepaway camp price. So I got to pay for the privilege of my kid working for you. So just saying.
Did not know that.
Anywho, well, I'm already off on a tangent, but I would like to say that this is the Breadwinners, and that the best way to support us on our lovely podcast as we're coming into a close for season 4 is to share the Breadwinners with a fellow breadwinner. And you know what, once you get to know us, you love us, right?
You love us. You cannot.
We're on all the socials, which are pretty much at the Breadwinners Pod. And we have the website. We're on all the podcast platforms. If you want to listen to us on something that I don't use, it's totally fine. The podcast is there. So there you go.
And we have merch.
Yes.
Don't forget about our merch. Everybody who listens to us can actually wear.
You can wear us. So, exactly.
Yeah.
So there's a link in the show notes. And, you know, come join us and wear. I swear to goodness, my Breadwinners, the white one is my favorite t-shirt. I wear it all the freaking time. So one. I do need to do the one that our in-house design team, i.e. Brett Sonnenschein, made that. What is it? It's like, I came for the coffee. What does that one say? And I'm out of coffee. I don't know. He thought it was very funny. It is funny. And I've completely forgot the joke. And I don't know. So welcome to the Breadwinners. And we are going to take 1 second right here to hear from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And we're back.
We're back.
This week, I'm handing the reins to you. What are we talking about this week?
So there is a person named Cheryl Kara Sandberg. Are you familiar with this person?
No, I have no idea who this person is.
So she currently is the chief operating officer of a company called Meta, formerly known as Facebook. And she announced a couple weeks ago, June 1st, that she is stepping down in the fall of 2022.
This is new information.
Yes, she is stepping down. And she did something else, though, in addition to a very, very impressive career path that she's taken. She wrote a book, which you may or may not have heard of, called
Lean In. I'm going to lean back while you tell me about this book.
It's called Lean In.
Oh, I went the wrong direction.
So she wrote that book, and she, in many ways, I think she saw herself, and many people also see her, as an advocate for women, for women's advancement in the workplace. There are conflicting opinions about whether or not she, you know, she really is the champion that she purports to be.
Right.
Which we will talk about shortly. But just to talk a little bit, it's helpful to think about her biography when we talk about the
what led her there.
That she's sending, right? So she grew up in a upper middle class Jewish family. She lived in North Miami Beach. She went to Harvard. She graduated summa cum laude. And she met, while she was there, she founded some organization called Women in Economics and Government. She also, you know,
I think I'm going to be thinking of the song Die Anew through this whole litany of all her achievements.
Well, this point is really noteworthy to me that we'll come back to in a little while. While she was at Harvard, she met Lawrence Summers.
Yes.
Who became her mentor and thesis advisor and also became the president of Harvard for a time. And he recruited her to be his research assistant at the World Bank. She sort of thought about, do I want to focus on public health and economic development across the world, or do I want to go to business school? So she went back to business school. Mm. And so she went to Harvard Business School. You may have heard that also.
I was
going to
ask, yeah. Okay.
And she earned her MBA with the highest distinction.
Jeez Louise, Die Anew. I mean, right. That would be enough.
Right. And then she went on to, you know, to have, again, this very impressive career. So before she joined Facebook, she was the vice president of global online sales and operations at Google.
Right.
And she,
by the way, the second Google executive we have now discussed on the Breadwinners this season. Marissa Mayer, right?
True, true. All the ladies at Google.
All the ladies.
So she did a great job in her career. And then in late 2007, she was at a party. It was a Christmas party held by a Jewish guy. That's another story. And she met a young man named Mark Zuckerberg. So he really, at the time, wasn't thinking about hiring a COO, but he kind of fell in work love with Sheryl Sandberg.
Yep.
And she was hired in March 2008. So that was kind of her trajectory, her path to Facebook. But there's this interesting kind of parallel path that around 2010, and I'm sure before this, but in 2010, she launched her TED Talk. Do you remember this TED Talk?
No.
Why We Have Too Few Women Leaders.
Wow.
And she had, it was basically, this became kind of the preview of what her book was about.
Really?
Yes. And we will include the link in our episode notes. But this is, she had a three-part advice. She had three mm-hmm. pieces of advice and was...
Which is TED Talk-like, right? Give us the actionable items. Got it. Yep.
So I just sent you her three.
Oh. Pieces. One, sit at the table. Two, make your partner a real partner. And three, don't leave before you leave. Oh, I remember the don't leave before you leave. That's yeah. right. That's yeah. coming back to me, right?
So the message, so I want to dive into Lean in a few minutes, but I think it's really helpful for us to think about the game of pinball that started around conversations about women in the workplace
mm-hmm.
that arguably she played a large role in, you know, launching that pinball. I'm doing a horrible job right. with my metaphors here, but yeah. she, you know, she's basically saying that women kind of undermine their own success by
choosing the wrong partners. Right?
Choosing the wrong partners. All, but before that, that's one of the points that is really, there's a couple points. There's a lot of points in there in Lean In that I just really am like, cool. Thanks, Sheryl. You, you know, look at your pedigree, look at your experiences and like, you're very privileged. And later on in her tenure at Facebook, she started after personal life changes, she started to actually like acknowledge, wait, I didn't realize when I wrote this book that like, you know,
we all didn't start out this way, you know, with a great supportive partner, with an education that is, you know, sterling.
Being white and
and connected, you know, because she does become very connected, which is great.
Yeah.
And to have a sponsor. A lot of the time we were at Working Mother, we were talking a lot about sponsorship, which is different from mentorship, where sponsors take an interest in your career, they pull you along, or when conversations are being had and they say, who could we consider for this big stretch assignment, they put your name forward. And right from the beginning, she had Larry Summers, who is an interesting character. Go look him up and his.
We could do a whole episode about Larry Summers, but.
But in any case, in this situation, he was supportive of her and gave her and brought her along with opportunities that she earned, by the way. You know,
That's the thing.
Completely hardworking, smart as a whip, and then was able to take the opportunity and then run with it, which is awesome.
So, I mean, she, you know, she's incredibly, incredibly
singular. Impressive. You know, she's singular, right?
Yeah.
She's Sheryl Sandberg, you know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, as we'll sort of shift back and forth between these two pieces of her, two areas of accomplishment, right? This thought leadership and advocacy for women in the workplace and her Facebook.
Her amazing success to take, I think it's something like she took $135 million revenue from advertising and turned it into billions and billions of dollars.
Yes.
That's what she did at Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah. You, you said that part.
Yeah.
So, she really transformed the company and, you know, I want to say in measurable ways, but actually quite measurable. And she, in 2012, 2012, she became the 8th member of Facebook's board of directors, the first woman as well. So she's knocked so much out of the park. It's really, you know, remarkable. I think when her book first came out, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, when her book first came out, you know, I was one of them. I think I was interviewed on WNYC, like just in
passing. Yeah.
Somebody came and like got a snippet from me. And I was like, you know, I talked about my objections, which we'll get into. I know I'm kind of alluding to it, but you know, I was pretty quick. I hadn't even read it. And no, but on purpose, yep. Like it hadn't come out yet. And they're like, what do you think about this idea? And I was like, I don't think it takes into account what, you know, the systems that are in play that are working against women, which is essentially a pretty big argument against what she created. But, you know, but I think there's a lot that it,
Yes. I mean, to talk about that book, I'm telling you, I was once walking down the street and there were three women younger than me, but like young professional women talking about the book in front of me on the sidewalk as we walked down the street.
And oh, like, interesting. When was this?
The book had just come out. It'd been out for like a month or two. And it was that big that you could hear just people talking about it. And they were positive and they were talking about like how it was encouraging them to do stuff, you know, because I was, you know, totally eavesdropping. I'll admit it now because, yes. Are we allowed to talk about the problems with Lean In yet?
Not yet. Because between that TED Talk and the release of Lean In, a very influential article came out in The Atlantic. Do you remember what it was called?
No.
Why Women Still Can't Have It All by Anne Marie Slaughter.
Oh, Anne Marie Slaughter. Yes.
So I actually thought when I was thinking back on that timeline, I was like, oh, you know, that must have followed Lean In just as a response to Lean In or something. And no, it didn't. It preceded it. I mean, it was a response. It may have been some... reaction to the TED Talk and to her...
That article. Her, yes.
You know, whole spiel. But I think, you know, it preached a very...
Basically said that you couldn't have a family where the both parents had high-end jobs. That was basically the gist of it, because they had had a family crisis and she was working at the State Department and her husband had some big job. I can't remember what he did. Oh, he was a professor.
Correct.
And so she gave up the job in working with Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. Mm-hmm. And basically this was her cri de coeur saying the society's not set up. We can't have two parents working around the clock. And she was jetting off because it's Secretary of State. You know, you're going from country to country. And yeah.
And she said, and I just sent you a quote.
Oh, I still strongly believe that women can have it all and that men can too. I believe that we can have it all at the same time, but not today. Not with the way America's economy and society are currently structured. My experiences over the past 3 years have forced me to confront a number of uncomfortable facts that need to be widely acknowledged and quickly changed.
So she talks about, you know, the societal barriers to, you know, and she talks about, you know.
Where's affordable childcare?
Right. The policy changes.
Where's a supportive workplace? Yeah. Paid sick time, all that sort of stuff.
Right.
Which becomes a New America Foundation.
Exactly.
You know, that
and our friend Bridget at the Better Life Lab works, you know, in partnership.
Is part of that. And you know, to Anne Marie Slaughter's credit, has continued to fight the good fight and to find grant funding to find ways to push this conversation forward. But at the time that article came out, was not loving Anne Marie Slaughter, I must say. No, I didn't find it helpful. I found it
interesting.
Also, she came up to our founder, Carol Evans, who will be our guest next week in our big finale. And said she told Carol, I'm coming after you, working mother.
Oh.
And we never, it never happened. It never manifested. And we never knew what she meant. Cause we're like, we're just trying to do the work every day, you know, I don't know. So I felt it like we felt, and so maybe it was, we misconstrued something. I don't know, but I don't know. And also have it all is a weird phrase. And you
interesting.
Know,
yeah.
Yeah. I found it very, so give up, young women. Just give up.
Interesting.
You know. I don't know. What did you think?
I took it as highlighting the systemic challenges that are, you know, that are still ongoing in respects. So I didn't interpret it that way, but that's interesting. But so same time, 2012, guess who is named as one of Time's most influential people?
Was it me?
It was you.
Was it Cheryl Diagne?
It was Cheryl. It was Cheryl. So she is, you know, she, as that conversation's going on, she's recognized in that way publicly. And when you look at like how many times she's been named one of the most influential people in a variety of contexts and publications, it's...
Oh, speaking at major events, like really life-changing, earth-shattering events. Yeah, she's there.
So this is, you know how in those influential people articles, they're written by somebody else?
Yes.
I don't know if you know that. So Muhtar Kent of Coca-Cola at the time wrote this quote.
I've often said that this promises to be the women's century. Sorry. And Cheryl is exactly the kind of refreshing leader who is, by word, deed, and example, creating new opportunities, removing obstacles, and making a real difference in others' lives. And as a devoted, hands-on mother of two, she is also nurturing the priceless personal connections that matter most. I mean, I want someone to say that about me.
I know. So, yeah. So, okay. So that was happening in 2012. There were these, Anne-Marie Slaughter, and there were a lot of other articles that came out. I think around then, the president of Barnard published. There, you know,
it really was.
The conversation started really blooming. Meanwhile, as we said, Facebook in 2012, Facebook IPOs and Sandberg joins the board. And then in 2013, she publishes Lean In, right? Which relates back to the TED Talk, as we talked about. So essentially, you know, it's this work Bible for professional women. And I use the word Bible intentionally because
Diane knew.
Because Diane knew, and because like it's preachy. Not to like get into like it's,
oh
it's,
yeah yep
it's I don't mean it like the Bible like the almanac or whatever. I mean like it is like the word from above in the corporate landscape, right? Like this is how to live your life, right?
For sure.
So she talks about, you know, I think you can interpret, she acknowledges the barriers that women are facing, the systemic challenges, she does. And she really not points the finger, but highlights, and feel free to chime in if you disagree with me, but highlights the ways in which individual women can be proactive and accountable about their success in the workplace. And we, you know, we talked about the three pieces that she...
Which is already individualistic at that point, right?
Right, right. So she's talking about sitting at the table, right?
That's the individual, yep.
Right, speaking up for oneself, not kind of shying away from, you know, not shying away from conversation, from
choosing the right partner, which
yeah, he talks about choosing the right partner.
And we spend 2 seconds on that because how, okay, you know, people change, circumstances change. Exactly. What are we looking for? You know, is there a foolproof plan for how partners are going to turn out?
When Demi started on that particular one.
I'm just saying, you know.
She says, when looking for a life partner, this is in the book, my advice to women is to date all of them. The bad boys, the cool boys, the commitment phobic boys, the crazy boys, but do not marry them. The things that make the bad boys sexy do not make them good husbands. When it comes time to settle down, find someone who wants an equal partner. Someone who thinks women should be smart, opinionated, and ambitious. Someone who values fairness and expects, or even better, wants to do his share at home.
Yeah.
Okay. These men exist, trust me, and over time, nothing is sexier. So,
well, which I fully agree, and true partnership, totally, I'm on board. But what do you even know when, you know, that's also assuming that you know what it means to be a full-on partner for all this stuff, right? That to choose this partner. That's assuming that by something, is it genetics? Is it by gender? That somehow we know how to be the better partner.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And by the way, there's no systemic issues there either. It's just, you know, you choose the right partner and all will be
right. And you're good. You're good to go. So, you know, she had actually been married and then divorced. So she didn't choose the right person the first time. She did choose Dave Goldberg, who she felt was her equal and was very supportive of her growth and development in her career and her, you know, her motherhood. And, and you know, that was really
great, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, that was an important piece. And she later went on to acknowledge, I think with a lot of points in this book, she kind of went on to acknowledge kind of where there might have been holes in her logic and her approach. And she wrote a few Facebook posts about it, which I'll get to. But the third point she makes that you referenced earlier that you want to dive a little deeper in is don't leave before you leave.
Yes. Well, and even getting a seat at the table. I mean, you know, those two, and don't leave before you leave. So, I believe what she's referencing there is, so you've had a kid and you can't figure out how to make it work. And so you opt out, you know, which was a big thing. If remember, it was it Lisa Belkin? Is that who the New York Times writer who did the, she was it a bunch of Yale graduates that she went back and looked and none of them were working? And like, and then she has since gone back and said she was wrong about that article. But that article was all that predates a lot of this stuff. But that, like, women with amazing degrees from amazing institutions were not choosing not to work, and then at figuring out, and also, like, I think one of the things that they talked about with that article later on, like 10 years later, was like, ooh, you don't really give a thought to, maybe this partnership does, you know, if you're going to live on one salary, maybe there's divorce, maybe there's death, maybe there's illness, who knows? Maybe your kid has like developmental issues, who knows?
Yeah.
And that just based on some weird sunny disposition that everything's going to stay the same. But so that conversation was happening in kind of part of this mix, but also, getting a seat at the table. I mean, I've had the experience of being with a boss who would tell you he's super nice, super supportive, but being the only woman in the team as it grew, a team that I was supposed to grow, and I did, being looked at like I was a nut for it, like all those things we talk about not being heard. You know, the thing with the Obama women, like in the administration, the women of the Obama administration, where they realized they were constantly being talked over and their ideas picked up by men. And so they did it. They all kind of made an agreement that, like, if you said something, I would second it and, like, kind of reiterate it. And we would live, you know, these things. That's, I mean, that's not even structural. That's like baked into our DNA that we're now listening to women. And so if you have one woman on a team and she finally makes it to the table.
Right.
Yeah. Also, if she can't afford childcare, if she is seen as less than because she's mommy tracked, because they make assumptions because she won't, well, she must not care about her career because she has like all that stuff. You may decide that you need to leave before you really wanted to leave.
Yeah.
And those were the problems I had with the book. I shall step down from the soapbox right now.
Well, there's a couple more pieces that I want to
highlight
again.
I'm following the
chronology. So 2014, she becomes a billionaire and then she launches a campaign. So we didn't talk about this, but leanin.org, like Lean In Circles was a phenomenon.
Oh, yeah, she creates the foundation. Amen. You know, anything that supports women, amen. And this was also a thing. This was a time when you were getting interviewed. I was getting interviewed too. And someone was like, it was some NPR thing. And I remember I was at an offsite thing. And I remember using someone's office to record the radio interview. And basically they wanted me to say something like bad about Lean In. And yes, that rant I just went on with the soapbox, that's for reals, whatnot. But getting women together to know their power and to know that that a billionaire woman's success is like turning around and saying, let me see how I can help other women.
Yeah.
Amen to that.
No,
and
great.
That these things are great and that the foundation is, you know, has love in its heart and doing all this sort of stuff. And I spoke basically both sides-ism with this answer and the report after they were done recording me. This is why I will never become like some pundit on TV. He said to me, well, you really thread the needle on that one.
Interesting.
Yeah. So yes, because there is pros and cons of what, I have feelings about the blinders to systemic thing, the pressures that pull down on women. And then to say, you know, some of the ideas in the book were take up more room at the table.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Interesting. And that it's in my head, you know, like I know it. And that, you know, when you're in those big meetings and there's like the table seats and then there's the seats around the room and she's saying, don't immediately go to the outside seats, go to the inside, sit at the goddamn table. Those are real.
True.
Those are real.
True. Do you know how many Lean In Circles there are, by the way?
No. How many? And like, how did that go? Because they were everywhere for a brief moment.
Yes, but today,
yes,
there are more than 35,000 circles in over 160 countries.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and doesn't that strike you like a bit of like the consciousness groups of like the 70s? Just women getting together and supporting each other and having an ear that says, I not only hear what you're saying, I understand what you're saying. That's awesome.
Yeah. But then, parallel to her career were these kind of, not parallel to her career. I'll just get to the point. 2018, there was the whole Cambridge Analytica scandal, which we could, you know, basically, you know, we could basically go on about.
Right. But if we were in different political podcasts, we would go on about the use of data and what they were doing. Yes.
Right. So then a whole slew of articles came out. One of them named Lean In's Sheryl Sandberg problem. Another How the end of Lean In, how Sheryl Sandberg's message of empowerment fully unraveled.
Really?
Yeah. So in 2018, with this Cambridge Analytica scandal, Lean In took a little bit of a beating. So there were, one of the more positive ones is from Bloomberg. After 5 years of leaning in, everything and nothing has changed.
Yeah.
So there were some pretty prominent and biting responses to this. And one of them, I'm going to post the quote for you to read, but our friend Catherine Goldstein.
Yes.
From the Double Shift, formerly from the Double Shift, or the founder of Double Shift. She had a fantastic piece on Vox where she talked about having been in a leaning circle and talking about, you know, really trying to follow the doctrine as yeah. I, you know, and her, the title of her article was, and this was December 2018, I was a Sheryl Sandberg super fan. Then her Lean In advice failed me.
Ooh, she is a great writer.
Yeah. So there was a lot of that. And then this person also wanted to weigh in.
Ooh, Michelle Obama says, I tell women that whole you can have it all. Nope, not at the same time. That a lie.
You Obama told the rest of the book. Yeah.
That's a lie. Obama told a sold out crowd at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn during December 1, which, by the way, you could not get tickets for, but as someone who lives down the street from the Barclays Center.
Right.
He told a sold-out crowd at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn during a December 1 stop on a tour promoting her memoir. It's not always enough to lean in because that shit doesn't work all the time. I'm telling you, it is an aspect. I completely agree. It's an aspect of it. Oh, and then let's be a woman who walks into the room with brown or black skin.
Yeah.
You know, Asian woman. As women of color will always say, you know, white women say they walk in and their gender is first. Women of color walk in and they have race and gender walking in with them. And that's the double bind. And that's the judgment that they're immediately seen that way before you even get to the skills. And so that's what Mrs. Obama is talking about there.
Yeah.
And it does not work all the time.
Yeah, there are.
And man, I don't want to write a book and have Michelle Obama have a comment on it. It's just, how about you and me just decide to write a book that Michelle Obama likes? Okay.
Exactly. But yeah, so she's speaking from this place of privilege, you know.
Yeah.
Race.
Hey, economic. This worked for me. You know, why can't it work for you?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So now, and she acknowledged some of those points. She went through a personal tragedy and lost her husband, and it was awful. And she wrote a book with our friend Adam Grant about it. And she started to, I think, see some of the cracks in her.
To her great credit, said, hey, you know, maybe I got a little, some of this wrong.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, she said in a Facebook post, it was a Mother's Day Facebook post, I'm especially thinking of the many mothers across the country and the world who are raising children on their own. People become single parents for many reasons, loss of a partner, breakdown of a relationship by choice. 1 year and 5 days ago, I joined them. For me, this is still a new and unfamiliar world. Before, I didn't quite get it. I did not really get how hard it is to succeed at work when you're overwhelmed at home. I did not understand how often I would look into my son or daughter's crying face and not know how to stop the tears.
Yeah.
You know, she says for many single mothers, this is the only world they know. And she talks about the financial burdens. She talks about, you know, of single motherhood.
Yeah, for sure. You know, whatever their great wealth was, they were living off a two-parent income, you know, whatever they had set up. And yeah, and even, I mean, yeah, she's a billionaire and all that sort of jazz. But when it's all on you, that's a lot different than, you know, my brother is a widower. And I was just saying this to my husband yesterday that one of the things that he said early on when his wife passed away, when my sister-in-law died, was to say, I lost my best friend, but also someone to bounce all these ideas off, you know, all these decisions off of. Mm-hmm. And that's the, you know, how do you always like lean in, take up real estate when, you know, you're also dealing with 100% of what's happening at home?
Yeah, I really feel that comment. Recently, when she made this announcement a couple weeks ago, the press kind of took another opportunity to say, let's reflect on her life and career to date.
Yeah.
And see what kind of impact she's had, both on Facebook or Meta and on feminism, essentially.
Yeah.
So there are a bunch of different articles that came out in the New York Times specifically, but there are a bunch of different places that she where was some reflection. But in one of the articles, Katha Pollitt, who's a feminist columnist, you know, she remembered that many friends and her daughter found Lean In to be, you know, really wise when it came out.
Yeah.
But she said, society has moved on. We pay a lot more attention now to the structural disadvantages women have. Everything from sexual harassment to childcare to no paid maternity leave. People have just moved on from seeing women's work lives as being determined by their own gumption.
That is so freaking true. That isn't that the difference of like 10 years ago to now?
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
like with the systemic, how we see systemic racism. Like, yeah, you know, if you've been reading, you knew it, but did you really feel it? And yeah. I feel like it's much more tangible for those of us who don't experience it every day. And the same thing for women. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that has been so shocking is the Me Too movement. Mm-hmm. That I really, the thought of, you know, I spent 10 years talking about work-life problems. Like, I still do, but, you know, in it every day, judging companies and blah, blah, blah. And then to realize that, oh my God, how unsafe women are at work. And like, wait, we haven't even solved the safety issue.
Right.
And that it was like, oh, you know, like I felt like we were running ahead on basic things like paid maternity leave and paid sick days and flexible work, when we actually are still three steps behind just making it that you can show up to work safely.
Right.
Yeah.
So another quote in one of these New York Times articles was by Rosa Brooks, who's a professor at Georgetown Law, who she said, not everything should be leaned into. It's not just how do I succeed on the terms of the workplace, but how do I change the workplace and make it a force for good?
Right.
So, you know, I think to your point, right, there's a lot that we've unpacked about what's broken about the workforce, what's broken about our society. And, you know, that Lean In was not about that.
Right.
So much. That being said, you know, if we look at, and, you know, I think to some extent, there is, you know, I don't credit Cheryl with all of this progress, but since Lean In came out, or since her TED talk, she tells the story, you know, that women are not making it to the top of any profession anywhere in the world. She says 190 heads of state, 9 are women. This is in 2010. Of all the people in parliament in the world, 13% are women. In the corporate sector, women at the top tops out at 15-16%. The numbers have not moved since 2002 rather. And she says, then they're going in the wrong direction.
Yep.
We've moved the needle. I don't have the exact numbers that are comparable, but the proportion of women in mid-market senior management roles grew to 32% in 2021. As of September 1st, 2021, there are 26 women serving as heads of state or government in 24 countries. I am not crediting her with the transformation of our society to, you know, to moving women to leadership. But there has been a lot that's changed. Also, the fact that the Me Too movement exists, you know, like there have been so many developments that I think, you know, I think lean in, whether you buy into, again, the doctrine or.
Yeah, 100% not. Or 25%. It was saying something that was interesting, that, you know, it resonated. It completely. Mm-hmm. And I felt I was you're younger than me. For me, I felt I was a little too old for it because it was like, you know, come on. Like I had already leaned in. I was surviving. Mm-hmm. My kids were a little older by that point. But especially, you know, anything that gets women who don't have children yet. Mm-hmm. And there's an old stat that I looked up a million years ago. And mm-hmm. so it maybe has changed. But it's something like 85% of women over 45 have kids. Mm-hmm. But I have always said our worst enemy, this is really strong language, but our worst enemy at work is often other women, young women before they have kids. Like they mm-hmm. never, you never think about it until it's you. And mm-hmm. so I always felt like executives would look down at the women and say, see, even the, you know, not all women agree. And it like, right, oh man. And what Cheryl, especially the thing about finding a partner, like in thinking strategically about this partner that you're going to, you know, it connects with the studies they often do out of Harvard Business School where they'll survey the graduates and they'll say like, who's going to do the work when you have kids? Right. And it's like, nobody has a plan. The men think the women are going to do it. The women are like, I don't know who's going to do it. And, mm-hmm. you know, and these are studies from like 2020, you know, like mm-hmm. this is not 1984, this is now, and we still haven't right. figured it out. And so Cheryl and Marie Slaughter, at the time I was like, what are you saying? Mm-hmm. But these are important conversations that, especially to the generation that hasn't committed, you know, hasn't decided on a family yet, or, you uh-huh. know, it may, like, please think ahead to this stuff. I didn't think ahead to any of this stuff. It didn't right. occur to me. And yet, because then we're kinder to the people who are going through it with the young children.
Yeah.
We're kinder to people who have disability or health issues. We're kinder to people who are getting a degree and going to school at night. Like, we're just kinder to each other because we realize that the perfect always on employee is ridiculous. But we all seem to go through it at the beginning of our career. Right. And we judge yeah. others who don't. Mm-hmm. And so thinking ahead to things like what should my partner, what conversations should we be having? That's a valuable, you know, thanks for bringing that up, Cheryl. You know,
right.
I also think Cheryl is getting, now that she's left her perch, she's getting, I feel like the, like a Jurassic Park, like all the little dinosaurs went whoop, whoop. And you know how they always attack female CEOs? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. There always seems to be like, oh, let's write the nasty story about some female CEO. Like, I feel like all of a sudden we're like, wait, you know, the billionaire COO, what's going on with her? You know, I feel like it's like fair game. She had been attracting rightful scrutiny on the role of Meta and the role of Facebook and Cambridge Analytica, all that sort of stuff. But I feel in the media that there's like a turn of like the little dinosaurs going, oh, you know, like, let's check her out.
Right.
So she's just another woman executive. So we ought to blame her for everything. But yes, that's yeah. amazing that the lean in circles are still so vibrant.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. So.
Oh, well, thank you for that. That was as someone who is always going up the mountain as she is and reaching pinnacle after pinnacle, that was still like twists and turns.
Yeah. She had an interesting path. And we didn't even talk about the January 6th uprising and the role of Facebook in that.
Oh,
and what she said yeah. about it. But that is for you, our listeners, to
yeah,
look up.
Go do a deep dive and yeah, you know. That's a masterclass in crisis communication gone wrong. So yeah.
Exactly.
So it must be hard, you know, like everything's, you know, peaches and cream and then it curdles and it's very hard to turn, you know? Yes. So I kind of get it fundamentally, but like also, ooh, you need it. Ooh, you should have made it. You didn't bank that curb very well. You like ran into the wall or something. So anywho, well, thank you so much for listening. This has been a wonderful episode, and we're coming to the end of season 4. And so I'll pass to you, Raquel. What do we always say?
Keep hustling.
This podcast is part of the Sound Advice FM network. Sound Advice FM, women's voices amplified.